Hello. That was my family section over there. As a matter of fact, wow, y'all look beautiful tonight. Thank you, thank you, thank you for coming out tonight. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful evening. I'm going to try to spread out the announcements so I don't talk too long. But I did want to introduce myself. My name is Bill Kimmons, and this is my... Thank you. And this is my fifth year of teaching up here, and this, at this moment, you are realizing one of my dreams. I don't know if you have like zeniths or high points, or what do you call those things? Somebody give me a word. Oh man, that was too many words. Epiphany, okay, or pinnacle, that's a good one. I thought I heard somebody say eggplants. Oh, this is not one of my eggplants. But this is a pinnacle. I have always wanted to MC an Augusta concert. So be sure to write on your evaluations what a wonderful job I did. Okay? Let me remind you of one thing so they don't come in and haul you off in handcuffs. There is no photographs, no videos, and no recordings during the concert. We please ask for your cooperation in this matter. So please, if you have those, any of those items, you can take them back and they'll check in and they'll keep them safe for you. This tonight, this vocal concert is really going to be wonderful. You're going to have some singers and songwriters out here that are just going to knock you out. If you think I look dressed up tonight, wait till you see Sheila Kay. Oh my. So, and Sheila Kay's first on the bill, so you're going to get to see her next. I wanted to just tell you a little bit about her. We sat backstage. One of the things nice about being an MC is you get to meet all of the performers and talk to them and find out a little bit about their lives. And that was a really neat thing. She was born with a banjo in her hand. I didn't know that. You know, I've always heard her sing a cappella. I didn't even know she played the banjo. And when I asked her how long she's been playing, and she said 35 years. So literally, she was born with it in her hands. And she was born in Western North Carolina in Sodom. Now, can you imagine being born in Sodom? There is no Gomorrah in North Carolina, only in your mind. And so she is from there, from Sodom, North Carolina. And one thing I said, is there something that you're kind of proud of? And she kind of swelled up three sizes bigger than normal and said, in 1998, and if any of you are mathematicians, that means last year, she won the Brown Hudson Award for the preservation of North Carolina folklore. She is the youngest recipient of that award in the history of the award given to North Carolina. One thing, too, being a starving musician myself, I'm going to plug people's CDs and tapes. I hope it doesn't bother you, me doing this, but it is such a wonderful thing to be able to take a piece of the person that you heard here home with you. There's nothing like seeing them live. We have Mountain Stage in my hometown of Charleston, and I go to a lot of the Mountain Stage concerts, and is nothing like seeing them live. But if you've seen them live and then you take a piece of them home with you, that feeling that you got sitting out here just keeps coming back over and over again. She has two ballad tapes, and also they have a few banjo tunes and a storytelling tape. But what really impressed me is, did you know she's written a book? I mean, she's literate. You know? I'm not, you know? She's written a book. And that book is called Come Go Home With Me, and it's stories of her growing up in Sodom. I'm just wondering, did people turn into pillars of salt and all that sort of stuff? So, before I talk any more, I just want to make an announcement. She asked me to make this announcement that after the concert tonight, immediately following the concert in the chapel, is going to be a ballad swap. So that should be a wonderful thing. There'll be several people there looking to swap ballads and singing ballads. So right after this, in the chapel, there'll be a ballad swap. Without anything else to say at the moment, I'm going to say, please welcome Sheila K. Adams.
Well, howdy. Are you uns having fun? Well, Lord have mercy, I am too. And coming from a place like Sodom, as Bill said, and I really did, it's a little mountain community wide spot in the road. And if you decide to visit, make sure your car's got a full tank of gas. And you might want to take a couple of meals with you if you go, because it's way back in the sticks. But anyhow, growing up in that little community, as you can imagine, there were lots of characters. And somebody asked me if I would tell this story. I was really fortunate in that I grew up in the house there with one of those characters. That would have been my daddy. Now, daddy was a real mess. He was what I referred to as the king of the one-liners. You know, he told me one time I was as graceful as a cow on a loose board pile. Doesn't that bring all kind of images to mind? Well, anyhow, when I turned 40, phone rang about 5 o'clock in the morning. I jerked it up, you know, hello. And daddy's voice said, howdy, honey. Happy birthday. And I said, daddy? He said, yeah. He said, I wanted to get sort of a quick start on this wishing you a happy birthday. You know, it's sort of traumatic for some people that turns 40. And how's it feel to be 40? I said, well, daddy, I don't know. I just woke up. But as best I can tell, it don't feel no different than it did when I was 39. Daddy said, yeah, getting a little testy. That's what happens when you start getting... Then he said, well, honey, I want you to remember something as you go through the day. Life begins at 40. And I said, well, thank you, Daddy. Bless your heart. He said, yeah, but you need to remember it ends shortly thereafter, about 42. Well, down the road from us was another one of those characters, and that was Little Betty. Now, all I ever heard her call was Little Betty, and there was a reason for that. See, she was about 4 feet and 11 inches tall and weighed about 78 pounds sopping wet. Now, Little Betty is married to Amos, and Amos, bless his heart, was a... Have y'all ever noticed how you can say anything you want to about somebody as long as you precede it with bless his or her heart? Well, Amos, bless his heart, is a great big old thing. He is about 6'6", I guess, and weighed close 400 pounds. Well, Amos got sick one winter, and he was sick all that winter up into the spring, and to borrow another one of Daddy's phrases, he was older than God's dog anyhow. And that spring he died. Y'all ain't near quick enough tonight. It must be Thursday. Well, anyhow, the custom back then was to send your dearly departed off with the undertaker in whatever clothes you wanted them dressed up in, and then they would bring them back there to the house. For the wake, they would set the coffin up in what they referred to as the front room, and people would come from all over the community and bring food, and they called it setting up with the body, or just the setting up. Well, you have to realize that we had every flavor of Baptist there in Sodom that you could imagine. We had Free Will Baptist, Missionary Baptist, Hard Shell Baptist, Primitive Baptist, Southern Baptist, Regular Baptist, just plain old Baptist, and then we had Buzzard Baptist. Now, Buzzard Baptist, for all of you that don't know, are Baptists that only go to church when there's a funeral, so we call them Buzzard Baptists. Well, Well, the Baptist church that Amos and little Betty were members of had gotten into a big fight and a row in amongst the congregation, which they were, that's pretty common. It's so common we called them Baptist swarms. They'd sort of swarm off and go somewhere else, start another church. Well, the ones there in the church took up money to buy Amos a suit to be buried in. Well, now, when the members that had left the church caught wind of that, they were not about to be outdone. So they took up money, too. So there is Amos now, the proud possessor of two suits after he had died. And he had never owned a single one the whole time he was living. But little Betty chose the green suit, sent it off with the undertaker, and he fixed him up, brought him back, and set him up. And the first person that showed up that afternoon for the wake was little Betty's sister Vine. And Vine and little Betty was standing there looking over in the coffin. And Vine said, "No, little Betty. They ain't got his hair parted on the right side. Now he don't look natural." So they went back in the bedroom, came back with a brush and a comb, reparted his hair and smoothed it down. Little Betty said, "Oh, you know, Vine, looking at him laying there, I believe I'd like him better in that other suit." So they decided to change Amos's clothes. Well, little Betty climbed over in the coffin with him, and she unbuttoned buttons, and she pulled and tugged, but now old Amos fit pretty snug in that coffin, and they couldn't get his clothes off. So she climbed back over in the floor, and they studied about it. They decided the best thing to do would be to get old Amos out of that coffin to where they could get at him good. So they managed to haul and pull and tug, got him up on the side of the coffin. Well, you know, it's sort of narrow up there on that little lip of a thing. And so he fell on the end of the floor. And then they changed his clothes. And then they had a big problem on their hand. They went right around and around him like two hawks a-circling for a while, a-trying various body parts, couldn't budge him. Vine said, "Lord, have mercy, little Betty, what are we going to do now?" Said, "Folks, he's a-fixing to set in showing up for this here wake. And he does look awful unnatural a-laying there on the floor that-a-way." Said, "People will talk." So they decided the only thing to do would be to run up the road to Irvin's. Now, Irvin was my daddy. Get him to come down there and help. So little Betty struck out up the road, and it was a right steep climb, sort of like starting at the gatehouse and winding up here at Gribble. You know, she is winded when she got up there. Well, now use your imagination. On the inside of the house, Daddy was watching a baseball game. He's a big sports fan. But he loved baseball. And he was totally immersed in that ball game. And I was sitting on the couch about 8 years old watching Daddy. Because it's a lot more fun to watch Daddy and hear what he had to say than it was to watch a ball game. So all of a sudden the door flew open and there stood little Betty hanging on the doorknob, sort of weaving back and forth, a breathing hard. And she said, "You've got to come down to help and help us get Amos back in his coffin." And I'll never forget the look on Daddy's face. And he said, "Well, where in the world is he, little Betty? I thought he is dead." And little Betty said, "You fool, he is dead. Me and Vine got him out in the coffin and changed his clothes. We can't pick him up off from the floor to get him back over in his coffin." Daddy said, "Little Betty, damned if you didn't worry him to death the whole time he is living and you're still after him." But Daddy, being the kind of person he was, he stood up. And I stood up. Boy, I wasn't about to miss it. Down the road we went to little Betty's. Got down there, and sure enough, there laid Amos in the floor, Vine a-keeping watch. I don't know where she thought Amos was going, but... Well, Daddy and Vine and little Betty struggled around there for a while, and it soon became obvious that old Amos had spread and settled. So little Betty said, "Lord, have mercy. Irving, now what are we gonna do?" Daddy said, "Well, little Betty, all I would know to do would be to go down to the store. There'll be a crowd down there watching the ball game, and I'll bring somebody back up here to help." So he left, and in a thought, his back with a full car load of men. And with all of the men and Daddy and Vine and little Betty, they managed to sort of scoop Amos up, shuffled him back over, and pressed him back down in the car. And then the men stepped back and was talking about the ball game. Left me and Vine and little Betty looking over in the coffin. Little Betty sort of straightened his tie, rubbed his hair down around the side of his head. She said, "Well, you know, Vine, now that I look at him laying there, I believe I did like him better than that other suit." Now, I will have to correct something that Bill said, just for my poor mother's sake. Wasn't quite born with a banjo in my hand. My mother's a little bitty old thing, so. I learned a lot of banjo tunes from a fiddle player down in Mount Airy, North Carolina, by the name of Tommy Gerald. Tommy was a real character, and I was visiting with him one weekend and had my daughter with me. Kind of reminds me of Carol Elizabeth and James and Vivian. Melanie went everywhere I did. And so I was singing her a lullaby, which y'all probably, a lot of you know. "Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna..." Oh, right? Okay. Tommy said, "Well, I believe I know a version of that." And he did, slightly different. He called it "Say, Darling, Say." Mockingbird, say, darling, say. And if that mockingbird won't sing, Daddy's gonna buy you a diamond ring. Say, darling, say. And there's that "say, darling, say" after every verse. If you wanna hit me, that'd be fine. And if that diamond turns to glass, Daddy's gonna buy you a looking glass. Say, darling, say. And if that looking glass gets broke, Daddy's gonna buy you a billy goat. Say, darling, say. And Tommy was great at improvising if you forgot a verse. And if that billy goat won't buck, Daddy's gonna buy a little Chevrolet truck. Say, darling, say. Say, little darling, if you wouldn't mind, you wouldn't do nothing but starch and yarn. Say, darling, say. Starch and yarn would be your trade, and I'd get drunk and lay in the shade. Say, darling, say. Say, darling, say. Well, I've had two of the best ballad singing classes up here. Such nice folks. We refer to ourselves as the ballad Nazis because we all are real serious about this ballad singing, and that's why we decided to have the swap So come on over there after that. Margaret's going to be there, Sheila and the other Sheila. But this is not a ballad, actually. I wrote this one for my grandmother had a lot of requests to do it. It's called Granny's Song. Granny was really a special person in my life, I guess. Probably the wisest human being I've ever known. As well as being a great ballad singer. And I remember growing up as a little girl, she had this big Hoosier cabinet in the kitchen. And a lot of you'll know what I'm talking about. It's one of those big white cabinets with, had the flour bin over on the left side. You know, you'd pull that out, and if I was behaving myself, I got to sift all the flour, you know, for making biscuits. And I would stand underneath that metal shelf that they could pull out of the middle of that thing, and I would open that storage space up underneath, and then I'd pull my dress up. Now, it didn't mean I was strange. I'm fixing to tell you why I'd do that, see. Because in that storage space, you had all these flour sacks, you know, cloth flour sacks. And I was always amazed at how many of those flour sacks had the same pattern as the underwear I had on. And so when she got really sick and had to go to the hospital, and they took her in by ambulance. See, Granny always had said she didn't want to die in the hospital. Wanted to die at home with her shoes on. So it just broke my heart. But my cousin Sue said, now you need to hurry because she's asked for you. Said she's got something real important to tell you. When I went flying into Asheville to Memorial Mission Hospital, just knowing that Granny was fixing to tell me the most profound thing I'd ever heard in my life. So I was ready. When I went into that little IC unit there, I paused right at the door, though, because, see, in my mind, Granny had always been this great, big, huge person. You know, had the biggest hands of any woman I've ever seen because she milked cows twice a day. And laying there in the bed, I realized for the first time that I was bigger than she was. You know, and so I immediately started crying, went over the bed. And I leaned down and I said, Granny, I've come. And she said, Lord, I'm awful proud to see you. I've got to tell you something important. So I leaned down, heart just pounding, put my ear right next to her mouth so I wouldn't miss a single word. And in a big old strong voice, she said, don't you ever cut your hair again. So I said, yes, ma'am. But I wrote this song for her on the way home that night. They finally ran all 30 of us off about 2:30 in the morning. And you know, some songs are truly inspired, and I reckon this one didn't take me but about 5 minutes to write. Thank y'all very much. Thanks, Jenny Hawker, for having me come up. And hope I get to see y'all somewhere down the road. In my mind to see her there on the porch sitting in her chair with her arms thrown wide to welcome me as I walked up the road past her cherry trees. And with blue-veined hands she taught me how to plant new corn, milk the cow, and she taught me songs of ancient lore about kings and queens and love and war. So, Granny, get your stick, come and walk with me. We'll go digging ginseng in our dreams. And we'll climb the hillsides over home as we close our eyes, set our thoughts to roam. And my heart, my soul, my spirit flies as I walk with Granny one more time. Granny loves you, she'd say to me, and the very best stuff in life is free as we rolled our britches to our knees to wade in the stream neath the buckeye trees. And what priceless gifts she gave to me, the love, the songs were all for free, the thoughts I carry in my heart. She helped to plant there from the start. So, Granny, get your stick, Come and walk with me, and we'll go digging ginseng in our dreams, and we'll climb the hillsides over home as we close our eyes, set our thoughts to roam. And my heart, my soul, my spirit flies as I walk with Granny one more time. Well, she reached back down through all those years, touched my heart, calmed my fears. She is my granny and my best friend. My love for her will never end. She takes my little ones on her knee, and she tells them tales that she once told me. With a gentle touch, she smooths their brow as she says, come walk with Granny now. So Granny, get your stick and come and walk with me, and we'll go digging ginseng in our dreams, and we'll climb the hillsides over home as we close our eyes, set our thoughts to roam. And my heart, my soul, my spirit flies as I walk with Granny one more time, as I walk with my Granny one more time. Thank you.
Sheila K. Adams. Isn't she wonderful? The only thing that I hate about these concerts is I wish I'd have been in that class now, you know? There's so many classes that you can do and so many wonderful things to do. The next person that's going to come out is Margaret MacArthur, and she's from Vermont. And I didn't get to talk to her at all until just a little while ago. And what a wonderful person she is, and what a fantastic life she's led. Listen to some of the radio show in 1951. Did that for a while, then moved on to touring for small groups and festivals. In 1985, she became, I love this one, a New England living art treasure. Isn't that wonderful? She was dubbed in 1985 and continues to be that art treasure and sharing her art everywhere she goes. She sang at the Kennedy Center just in 1997. They invited her down to sing for the Vermont State Day celebration at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. She has records, and she means real records, vinyls, for you guys that still have the turntables. She has records and tapes and CDs out there. She records with a family band, where that must be wonderful to be able to sing with your children. Someday, if my children start speaking to me again, hopefully I'll be able to sing with them. I don't know whether I'm going to have to get younger or they're going to have to get older. I haven't figured that one out yet. But she sings with her children. She has two sons and a daughter, which some of you may have heard of, Megan MacArthur, with a band called Trillium in Maine. Has anybody heard of that group from Maine? That's her daughter. So without further ado and any more to say, Margaret MacArthur.
It's a great pleasure to be here. I've been here to Augusta a few times, and I'm going to start with a song that, a very old poem that someone set to music. It was a poem written by John Gay. It was collected in Maine. Mm-hmm. Chipotle moored, streamers waving in the wind. When dark-eyed Susan came on board, inquiring for her absent friend, tell me, you jovial sailors, tell me true, does my love Willie, my love Willie, sail among your crew? Willie, who high up in the yard, rocked by the billboards to and fro, soon as this well-known voice he heard, sighed and cast his eyes below. The cord glides swiftly through his glowing hand, quick as lightning, quick as lightning, on the deck he stands. Oh, Susan, Susan, lovely Sue, my vows will ever true remain. Let me kiss off those flowing tears, we only part to meet again. The noblest captain in all that British fleet might envy Willie, envy Willie's lips, those kisses sweet. Listen to what the landsmen say, they'll try to tempt thy constant mind. They'll tell these sailors when away, in every port a mistress find. Oh yes, believe them when they tell thee so, for thou art present, thou art present wheresoe'er I go. If to fair India's shores I sail, thine eyes are like the diamonds bright, thy breath is Africa's spicy gale, thy skin is ivory so white, the fairest breezes wheresoe'er I go bring me memories, bring me memories of my lovely Sue. The bosun gave the dreadful word, the sails their swelling bosom spread. She could no longer stay on board, turned away and hung her head. Her little boat unwilling rowed to land. Adieu, she cried, adieu, she cried, and waved her lily hand.
Thank you. Such a beautiful love song. It's just my favorite love song of all time. Now I'm going to sing a song dedicated to all the fanatical dancers here this week. It has a chorus that goes, Tura Lura Lura Lido, Tura Lura Lura Lee. Oh, what fun we had together down to Jones's pairing bee. And the pairing bee is the apple pairing bee in the old days in Vermont. great apple-growing state, and earlier in this century, it was the only way to preserve the apples was to dry them. So all the teenagers would come and pare apples for Farmer Jones because he played the fiddle. And their folks would by no means let them out to go dancing to fiddle music, but they would let them to go paring apples, not knowing how fast they were going to pare the apples and get to the fiddling in the barn. Susan Jane, do you remember down to Jones's pairing bee when I took you and your brother along with Sally Green and me to Rulu, Rulu, Rulido, to Rulu, Rulu, Rulu? What fun we had together down to Jones's pairing bee. Yes, Josiah, I remember, 'twas in winter time, you know. We wandered along the highway, then we went on through the snow to Rulu, Rulu, Rulido, to Rulu, Rulu, Rulu. Oh, what fun we had together down to Jones's pairing bee. When old Jones struck up the fiddle, hallelujah, didn't he play? Old Zip Coon in Portland Fancy, Virginia Real O'Day, to Rulu, Rulu, Rulido, louder, Lu, Rulu, Rulu. Oh, what fun we had together down to Jones's pairing bee. Josiah, while we're dancing, what if Pa should pop in here? He'd make us turn a cartwheel, waltz us out upon our ear. Toodle-oo, rolly, 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 rolly. What fun we had together down to Jones's pairing bee. When old Jones struck up the fiddle, hallelujah, didn't he play? Right and left and down the middle, we danced till break of day. Toor-a-loo, ra-loo, ra-lido, toor-a-loo, ra-loo, ra-lee. Oh, what fun we had together down to Jones's pairing bee.
One more song in praise of the dancing. This is an old poem that I will recite and play the tunes. If I were home, my son Gary would be playing the fiddle with this, but I'll give it a whirl here. Thanks for singing the chorus. I didn't mean to holler out louder, but I thought, well, I can't hear you too well up here, but then it got really great. Thank you. Folks from all the country round, from high and lowly stations. Boys, they brought their sweethearts and the grandpas brought relations. They played old turkey in the straw and all the tunes bewitching.
for young and old to heel and toe in Farmer Jones's kitchen. The prompter cried in guttural tones, "For quadrille, take your places," as each for partners made a rush with happy, smiling faces. Grandpa's danced the minuet with Grandma's Jane or Lizzie, and Petronella's step so fine made lads and lasses dizzy. Tempest, too, was hurried through with fiddles loud a-squealing. From Portland Fancy on they flew through old Virginia reeling. Irish washerwoman next brought flying feet, I'm betting. Polka, waltz, and schottische, and haste to the wedding.